And what's amazing to me, Alex, is here you had all of these individuals, the president, the vice president, all of his staff, all the counselors, the attorney general, the former attorney general, all been subpoenaed. That never made the news. That's news in itself, Alex. All these people went and were subpoenaed. That never made the news. Then they go in and testify. Think about it. The President of the United States, the Vice President, Alberto Gonzalez, the current Attorney General, former Attorney General Ashcroft, now they're all testifying, and they've got, if they haven't all testified, at least some of them have testified, that the subpoena would be major news. The testimony would be more major news. None of it is on the air. Left-wingers, right-wingers, it's not on the air. The Democrats aren't talking about it. Republicans aren't talking about it. And now I come along and say, in a criminal grand jury where there's been subpoenas, where there has been testimony, now I'm saying that there have been indictments through my source, Thomas Hennigan, who is providing, now think about it, he's providing evidence to the grand jury.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Friday, August 19th, 2005. And you guessed it, this would be Newsreel. Your daily report is the woke counterculture defeats the evil of core political tyranny. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you can still get to my live journal by going to Sean, S-E-A-N, underscore Kennedy, like the dead guy, .livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1, and you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit, which includes building yourself your very own trebuchet and firing the discs Sabo style all over Parliament Hill. I got some feedback right off the top. It seems that I've let a tiger out of the cage in regards to the Liberty Dollar. Now, for those of you playing along with the home game here, yesterday was the hack of the day was the Liberty Dollar. And the whole concept of the Liberty Dollar was that you would take money and put cash in with the money, and meaning cash in the form of precious metal. So you've got, like, this guy minted this money, and he's put real silver in, so the silver holds on to its worth. Not a bad idea. It'd be like buying gold, only the gold is minted so that it looks like, you know, cash or what have you. So, I mean, I gave it a quick read, and I'd heard about this, I believe, on the Art Bell Show, and I'd heard about it in a couple other locations, and somebody sent it in to me, so I thought, well, you know, whatever, we'll throw it into the hack of the day. But no sooner had I thrown it into the hack of the day than Sumerian crawled out of his hole and began screaming at me. He sent me the following email, criticism for Liberty Dollar's yesterday's hack of the day. Liberty Dollar does not have the liquidity generally associated with currency, such as the ability to easily convert other currencies and the ability to deposit into savings and checking accounts in conventional banks, which is not exactly what you'd want anyway. I mean, it's not like you're getting this stuff to put it back into the bank. The whole point is to have something that you would, you know, be able to hold and therefore would retain its value. That's the whole purpose of the Liberty Dollar. Moreover, critics believe that Norfed, I guess is the guy who does this stuff, claims the currency is inflation-proof, but to be false. Instead, it's hedging against inflation, since generally silver and gold retain their values in high inflationary periods, but can lose value in periods of deflation or low inflation. Norfed has promised to switch from backing each $10 in Liberty Dollars with 1 ounce of silver to back each of $20 with 1 ounce of silver should the spot price of silver climb above $10 an ounce, which critics see as a debasement of the currency. The widest criticism of the Liberty Dollars is that they're not backed with silver in an amount equivalent to the face value of the currency based upon the current prices of silver. And it goes on. There was a link yesterday to the Wikipedia, and I suppose You know, once again, we had some guys on my live journal were posting about it. One guy met the fella, said that it's not a scam. The guy has, you know, the best of intentions, all the rest of it. But then it was further along that it's also been set up as a mild pyramid scheme, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of controversy associated with that. Now, me personally, I do not know a hell of a lot about it. Scammed over, it seemed like a really good idea, you know, when it went, took a look at it. I don't got no Liberty dollars or nothing like that. But I threw it out to you, and it seems that through the open source of communication that we possess using the internet, we're going to be able to get to the bottom of this. So if people want to go back and, you know, read the forums, check out what's going on. Well, not read the forums, but you can read my live journal. Maybe we could do it in the forums rather than on my live journal. But if you go see the link, you'll be able to see right there that there are people who say pros and cons against the whole thing. And it does seem that there's very much a pyramid scheme and an upline, downline kind of thing being sent on there. So me personally, I'm a little sketchy on the whole Liberty Dollar thing, you know, but that's okay. I mean, I make mistakes all the time. I generally try to make about 20 or 30 mistakes between 10 o'clock every morning, which, you know, is pretty easy for me. So just be advised that you want to do some heavy investigation. Never take anything at face value. Always do heavy investigation before you start investing money into something like that. Dear Sean, the CCTV stories claim that CCTV cameras identified the London bombers. I strongly disagree. The data just isn't there to support the claim. Just because the authorities say the photos that they put up throughout the global news agencies are the bombers, what data supports that? The photos do not show any suspicious activity. They're just pictures of guys pulled off of cameras somewhere. We have no supporting data to authenticate whether the photos came from where or from when. Not all cameras have the time date stamp next to the info on the pictures. Sean, please tell us, how do we know the cameras identified a criminal? As well, your theory that the electrician, this is my theory I have, that the electrician, the dude who got shot, executed in the subway, the Brazilian guy, he was an electrician in the country illegally, and I've got some stories on that today, let me tell you. I believe he was executed because he was involved in making the bombs. I think he was the one final guy who actually put the bombs together and assembled all the wiring and that. Your theory that he is the bomb maker, the guy goes on here, makes perfect sense and may well be the truth. We may never know. One other possibility is that the authorities needed a patsy, wanted a success of some sort, and ordered the hit. I think this guy may have done nothing wrong at all, not even be providing technical skills for the bomb. I keep up the great work. Your friends support you. Log on, Falware. Now, I don't think it would just be a hit, just, you know, cause a distraction. There'd be a better ways to get distractions. Just go out and geek somebody. I believe that the guy, the Brazilian dude, actually made the bombs and they're just shutting them up. Because, of course, the first rule of assassination is make sure you kill all the assassins and everybody who has knowledge of the assassination. So if the dude built the bomb, yeah, you're going to make sure you're going to shut him down because you can't have him wandering around the wilderness, you know, starting to talk and stuff like that. Now, my lead story here, which ties in from that wonderful little clip I put at the beginning of the show, talking about the Bush administration being indicted. Now, this is interesting stuff, and apparently it's legit. So further notes as things develop here. But apparently, Risen Dordern sent me this. On Friday, the 12th of August, 2005, Alex Jones, who, you know, is a rabid right-wing mudhutter himself, but still, he does have good facts, and, you know, he's out there as kind of a consciousness commando in his own right. Alex Jones interviewed investigative journalist Tom Flacco, who has written for WorldNet Daily and many other major publications. And he was in attendance of many of the 9/11 Whitewash Commission's meetings and has broken many big stories in recent years. Flacco claims he has received information from intelligence sources and sources on the fringe of intelligence that suggest indictments have been handed down to members of the Bush administration. Now, this is huge. He has it on good authority that U.S. federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald's grand jury has convened in Chicago to indict Bush officials for perjury and obstruction of justice. According to Flacco, individuals have been at work for over a year and a half on this matter. Patrick Fitzgerald is certainly no stranger to investigation of indictment of government officials. Fitzgerald is the special prosecutor investigating the leak of covert CIA operatives Valerie Plame's name to columnist Robert Novak, and his office is also prosecuting former Illinois Governor George Ryan and loyal associates of Chicago Mayor Richard Daley on influence peddling and corruption charges. This is brutal stuff. Flacco named Tom Hengeland, a stockbroker in California who has sources within intelligence that may have revealed thousands of individuals are sick of government agenda since 9/11. In addition to selling out of intelligence, officials left, right, and center are gathering evidence of criminality and taking it to grand juries. The Valerie Plame case is just one such example of this kind of activity. Yet, according to Hennigan, there's much more going on than our media is not simply reporting. And that is what I believe. Sources close to the jury probe have allegedly told Hennigan that a host of administration officials under Bush have been indicted, including Vice President Dick Cheney, Chief of Staff Andrew Card, Cheney Chief of Staff Louis Scooter Libby, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, former Attorney General John Ashcroft, imprisoned New York Times reporter Judith Miller, and former Cheney advisor Mary Matlin Hennigan. Also allegedly told sources, White House advisor Karl Rove was indicted for perjury in a major document shredding operation cover-up. If such information regarding these indictments is correct, the fact that it has not made the media that the president and the vice president have been subpoenaed to appear before a federal jury indicates there's a major cover-up in operation. Now, if we've got anybody out there on the Hill, if they could, you know, see if they could take a look at this and find out what's going on, I'm sure that we've got some people in Washington. Some WOG's got to be out that way. Maybe we could see if we could follow this and see where this goes. But this is some pretty heavy stuff. The fact that there's this kind of thing being even said on the air naming names, I mean, wow. And yet, of course, you know, Fox News is more concerned about the Peaceaholics protesting, you know, video games. That's the level of reporting that we're getting with mainstream news. And that's why you listen to Newsreel. Now, in Microsoft Raider news, now this is quite the story in of itself. Computer firm Apple may have to pay Microsoft £6, or $12, for each iPod it sells after a huge licensing lapse. Lawyers for Bill Gates' firm filed a patent for technology behind the hugely successful digital music player 2 months before Apple did. The U.S. Patent Office has ruled that Microsoft has the right to charge competitors a license fee for each iPod sold. Now, you know, it's big business fighting with big business, but this is brutal. Furious, Apple has said it will appeal the decision, but at the moment it looks as though the firm will be paying a high price for the success of its product. Wow. The iPod was launched in November 2001, but Apple waited until July 2002 to file for a patent. Microsoft snuck in to license some of the technology the previous May. David Kafer, Microsoft's director of intellectual property licensing, said it was open to letting other firms patent its innovations. He said, "In general, our policy is to allow others to license our patents so they can use our innovation and innovative methods in their products." Well, actually, this is just a way so that they can make money off of Apple. I mean, you know, what a great way to take out your major competition. Microsoft and Apple have previously licensed their respective patent portfolios to one another, and we maintain a good working relationship with Apple. No, you don't. Apple's going to shoot you. The dispute comes days after Microsoft declared war on the iPod, pledging to come up with a series of rivals. So far, 21 million iPods have been sold worldwide, 18 million in the last year alone. So we're talking, I mean, does that mean that they're going to have to kick up the cash on the iPods they've already sold? Because if they own the patents, doesn't that in fact mean that they will? And if it's, you know, well, if it's, you know, $12 or even $10 an iPod, that's, you know, looking at $210 million that they're going to be paying Microsoft. I mean, this is huge cash we're talking about here. And I got to say, that's a pretty, you know, lowbrow sort of ethical thing to do. I mean, but once again, you know, what am I doing? I'm talking about ethics and business. Don't be ridiculous, Sean. Obviously, those don't exist. Now, the big 7-7 news that got sent in by Dark Nature here was that ITV News had obtained secret documents and photographs that detail why police shot John Charles Menzies dead on the tube. The Brazilian electrician was killed on 22nd July, the day after a series of failed bombings on the tube and bus networks. So, a series of failed bombings. How can there be a series of failed bombings after nothing happened? The crucial mistake that ultimately led to his death was made at 9:30 a.m. when John Charles left his flat in Scotia Road, South London. Surveillance officers wrongly believed that he could have been Hussein Osman, one of the prime suspects, another terrorist suspect. So now they're saying that they thought he was another suspect. By 10 a.m. that morning, elite firearms officers were provided with what they described as positive identification and shot Menzies 8 times in the head and upper body. So they're saying that it was a case of mistaken identity. The documents and photographs confirm Jean-Charles was not carrying any bags and was wearing a denim jacket, not a bulky winter coat, as had been previously claimed. So they've already admitted that they've been lying. They've been lying all the way along. Now they're going, they thought he was a terrorist. You know, never mind the fact he was wanted for questioning. Now they thought he was a terrorist, and then they shot him. I'm still going with the notion that he built the bombs. He was behaving normally. He did not vault the barriers, even stopping to pick up a free newspaper. He started running when he saw a tube at the platform, like every other human being on the planet. Police had agreed they would shoot a suspect if he ran. The document describes the CCTV footage, which shows Mr. DeMenzies enter Stockwell Station at a normal walking pace and then descend slowly on an escalator. The document said, at some point near the bottom, he is seen to run across the concourse and enter the carriage before sitting on an available seat. Almost simultaneously, armed officers were provided with positive identification. A member of the surveillance team is quoted in the report. He said, I heard shouting, which included the word police, and turned to face the male in the denim jacket. He immediately stood up and advanced towards me and the CO-19 officers. I grabbed the male in the denim jacket by wrapping both my arms around his torso, pinning his arms to his side. Then I pushed him back onto the seat where he'd previously been sitting. I then heard a gunshot very close to my left ear and was dragged away onto the floor of the carriage. The report also said a post-mortem examination showed Mr. DeMendez was shot 7 times in the head and once in the shoulder, but 3 other bullets missed, with the cases left lying on the tube carriage floor. Police have declined to comment while the mistaken killing is still being investigated. I don't think it was a mistaken killing. I think he was probably executed because he built the bomb. But who knows, you know? I suppose it is possible. I find it kind of hard to believe that the country that invented counterterrorism is having such a hard time just trying to get a positive ID. And further to that, if they thought he was a terrorist, why did they just shoot him? I mean, if they got a terrorist, wouldn't they just hand him off to a bunch of guys, you know, who look like Max von Sydow, who would, like, pump him full of drugs and learn everything there is to know? Wouldn't he be more valuable to be questioned since he's already on a train? He's already in a contained environment. Wouldn't he be more valuable to question since he's not carrying a bomb? Or why would they just, you know, hit the off switch and turn the guy off? Oh, well, we were just mad. We were mad because he set off the bombs. And there was an attempted bombing, a failed bombing, where nothing happened the day before. Interesting. Interesting stuff. I'm sticking with my original theory that the guy built the bombs and this was an execution. In paranoia news, this was sent in by Shai Halud. Infants have been stopped from boarding planes at airports throughout the United States because of their names are the same or similar to those of possible terrorists on the government's no-fly lists. This is absolutely insane. It sounds like a joke, but it's not funny to parents who miss flights while scrambling to have their babies' passports and other documents faxed. Ingrid Sanderson's 1-year-old daughter was stopped in Phoenix before boarding a flight home to Washington at Thanksgiving. I completely understand the war on terrorism. Well, I'm glad you do. And I completely understand people wanting to be safe when they fly, Sandin said. But focusing the target a little bit is probably a better use of focusing the target a little bit is probably a better use of resources. The government's list of people who are barred from flying or required extra scrutiny before being allowed to board planes grew markedly since 11 September 2001. Caught in the sweeps are the children's. Critics of this new rule include the American Civil Liberties Union, saying the government does not provide enough information about the people on the list, so innocent passengers can be caught up in the security sweep if they happen to have the same name as someone on the list. Which you'll notice that that would be very easy to avoid, but I think that there's probably quite a bit of a racist backlash going on with the government right now because, you know, how many people are named Mohammed, right? I mean, you're not going to get too many Western people named Mohammed. They're usually Muslim families and stuff like that. And America doesn't like Muslims. I mean, that might be a very bold thing to say, but I mean, how obvious can you be about this? Actions speak louder than words, and it's pretty apparent that America hates Muslims. It seems to be that way to me. They are being jacked everywhere they go. There's a lot of, it's not really, if you're a Muslim, you're not thinking, geez, I want to move to America. That's not really the number one thing there. And when the president of the United States has come out and claimed himself to be, you know, a hardcore mud hut dude who believes in the rapture, well, you know, that pretty much lets you know how he feels about Muslims. That can happen And now for this whole thing with this no-fly list, it can happen even if the person is an infant, such as Sandin's daughter. Children under two do not need tickets, but Sandin purchased one for her daughter to ensure that she had a seat. It was bizarre, Sandin said. I was hugely pregnant, and I was like, we look really threatening. Sarah Zabolski and her husband had a similar experience last month while departing from Dulles International Airport outside Washington. An airline ticket agent told them their 11-month-old son was on the government list. Dun, dun, dun. So it seems that children are not so good in flying in the United States. Not really outstanding there. Now, we got some cyberpunk kit for you. This is an update on, I reported a while ago on shock coats. This is a kind of a jacket that's built in to be a taser. So if anyone grabs you, you just simply hit the button on the zipper and Buddy catches a bunch of voltage. According to the Senate Judiciary Committee, three out of four women in the United States will be victim of one violent crime during their lifetime. Dun, dun, dun! Which is interesting, that spec, because men are actually 10 times more likely to be a victim of violent crime than women are. So what does that mean? That means that six out of four men would be, The no-contact jacket is a wearable defensive jacket created to aid women in their struggle for protection from violence. When activated by the wearer, 80,000 volts of low amperage electrical current pulse just below the surface shell of the entire jacket. This exoelectric armor prevents any person from unauthorized contact with the wearer's body. Now, this in itself... okay, let me get through this. If an assailant were to grab hold of the wearer, the high voltage shock exterior would interrupt their neurological impulses, which control voluntary muscle movements. The neuromuscular system would be overwhelmed, causing disorientation, loss of balance to occur, and of course, pain. The pain experienced is non-lethal, but is enough to enough shock to effectively and immediately deter contact with her body and provide a critical life-saving option for escape. The goal of the no-contact jacket is to call attention to violence against women and to offer an alternative response to the body's vulnerable space and boundaries that society, culture, and fashion have created. Now, that's very interesting. It's hardcore sexist, but it's also very interesting. You know, you look at the fact that they say, well, we want to stop the violence against women. Violence against women. So, like, that statement, what it implies is that violence against men is okay. You know, because men are supposed to be all rough and tumble, right? Men are supposed to get into fights and punch people out. The minute that they punch people out, then they get charged with assault. That's what they're saying here. They're talking, we want to stop violence against women. How about you just stop violence? You know, violence is not really a lot of fun. How about we get past the violence against women thing and just get, you know, against violence? Further to that, you know, why don't you, since everyone's so concerned about violence, you know, and they're handing out non-lethal stuff, this is kind of ridiculous. This is it's a neat piece of kit. Don't get me wrong. It's a neat piece of gear, and I think it's great. I just kind of object to the whole fact that they're, you know, marketing it just to women. Why don't they make a guy jacket that does that? I mean, because there's guys who get robbed all the time. Guys get jacked all the time. You know, why not make it so that it's for both men and women than just playing, you know, the sexist card? I don't know. It just kind of bugs me, eh? Because it implies, of course, that women are always going to be the weaker sex, so on and so forth. So I'm a lot more for equality myself. That's sort of my own personal guideline. But I guess, you know, whatever you can use to sell your product. Now, that said, that's the marketing guy needs to get punched in the face. But provided it's not a woman, of course, because we only are against violence against women. But if it's a marketing guy who did that, well, yeah, we'll hang him up and torture him with, shock cables or something, you know. But if it's a woman, we can't do that. No, absolutely not. Men can have violence all they want, but none for women. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. Why not just make it, you call it for what it is. You're trying to make it so that, you know, I guess you're trying to get through the legal standpoints or whatever, but it ought to be a jacket against violence. It ought to be shock armor against violence, not just violence against women. You know what I'm saying here? Can you follow that? Granted, that said, I mean, I'm glad there's something, you know, because I'd like to see, you know, if there's only, I'd rather have that jacket out there in circulation for women than having no jacket in circulation whatsoever. So that said, you know, what have you, go with that and do with it what you will. Another piece of cyberpunk kit is these new, what I've called, polyglasses, as in coming from a polygraph, now it's polyglasses. A new lie detection technology promises, remarkable benefits in determining whether people are telling the truth in real time. These glasses help you know when people are telling the truth. The technology is already being tested in a wide variety of applications such as anti-terrorism, law enforcement, and insurance claim assessment, and he's even been built into a pair of glasses with internal LED lights, which will run a real-time analysis of conversations of the wearer, reporting on the veracity of the person, reporting the veracity of the person the wearer is speaking to with a claimed accuracy better than 95%. So what we're saying here is that these glasses apparently have a 95% accuracy rate in detecting whether or not you're lying. I am really hesitant to believe that because I can lie like a mofo. And there's all kinds of, anyone who's taken any kind of intelligence training know that there's all kinds of ways to trick your brain so that you can get past polygraph and all the rest of it. The Israeli developed technology is being licensed to companies for a wide array of applications such as anti-terrorism, law enforcement, insurance, and workers' compensation claim assessment. Ah, there's a good one. Insurance and workers' compensation claim assessment. And since they've already stated it's 95% accurate, we can get those workers so they don't get any insurance. Isn't that a good idea? And it's already available as a downloadable PC program which can analyze live telephone conversations. Sort of like your sneakers sort of thing going on there. The company is already showing a pair of glasses with internal LED lights, which will run real-time analysis of conversations of the wearer reporting the veracity person the wearer is speaking to with a claimed accuracy of 95%. The Israeli technology is being licensed in America through a company with a single letter name of V. Now, if you look at this company, V, they have a very interesting line of products, and they're doing a bunch of high-speed stuff that may be worth watching, but I'm a little bit concerned that we'll get these funny little buzzer toys that people say, oh, they're lying. See, this toy said it was lying. And you're like, no, I'm not lying. Well, the toy said you were lying, and we've got all these reports here that say they're 95% accurate. So you know what? We're going to go to court and deny you your service. That's the kind of thing I'm worried about there. So be advised. Now, as well, if you look at the people who've actually had some interrogation training, not that I've had, after all, where would I get interrogation training from? But if you look at anyone who's had any interrogation training, it's very easy to lie and defeat polygraph. It is a very easy thing to do. They are not accurate. And so for you to tell me that you're going to do voice stress analysis and tell me that you can tell me with 95% accuracy that it's, you know, going to be the truth, well, I'm going to call you a liar to your face. Thanks for coming out. Now, in language police news, and this was from Cloak Perspective, advertisers' representatives are to lobby the government in protest and plans to stop business clashing in London's hosting the 2012 Olympics. Now, this is for an Olympic Games that's like what? Like 7 years out? The Olympics bill sets out rules to combat the use of games-related words and images by non-official advertisers. Can you believe this? The Institute of Practitioners in Advertising say it will prevent most companies from benefiting at all from 2012. This is an unreasonable bill and revisions are required, IPA legal director Marina Palamboa told BBC Sport. It is absolutely right that official sponsors are protected, but there has to be a balance. The bill was drawn up by the Department for Culture, Media and Sports, DCMS, to establish the legal framework for London to stage the Games, and London's organizing team insists that the legislation is necessary to safeguard the investment of the official sponsors, which of course are the core political who want to have all the press for, you know, their games there. There is absolutely no intention of stopping London businesses from becoming involved in the Games. Quite the reverse, said a London 2012 spokesman. There will be hundreds of opportunities across a wide range of areas and sectors for London businesses as we look forward to outlining them all over the next 7 years. The bill was published on the 14th of July, just 8 days after London beat Paris to win hosting rights at a vote in Singapore. The provision includes laws to stop ambush marketing, the practice of a company associating itself with an event without being an official sponsor. So, it's like you don't have the right to claim that you like the Olympics, you can't tie your business to the Olympics, you can't do any of that stuff because, after all, we're the language police. And you can only do this kind of thing if you've been officially sponsored and if you have enough cash to be sponsored. So, you know, people who want to say they backed the bid and all that good stuff and voted for it and all the rest of it. No. You don't get the right to have the 2012 Olympics associated with your business. You don't have that right. But the people who, you know, have spent major dollars, all the corporations got this all sewn up, only they will be able to have the Olympics there. Now, the Olympics are starting to piss me off. really. I mean, we got them coming here to Vancouver in 2010, and I'm like, you know what? Okay, it's all kind of, you know, nice. You know, people run and they jump and they swim and all that stuff, and they talk about, you know, human capabilities, yada, yada, yada. You know, Hitler was big into the Olympics, too. There's a lot of people, you know, Olympics are nice. But realistically, who makes money from the Olympics? Is it the athletes who really is what, that's really what the Olympics should be about? It should be about the athletes. So are they coming out of this, you know, ahead? No. No, it's an economic scam. What they do, and this is what they're doing here in Vancouver. Let me tell you what they're doing here in Vancouver right now. Let me give you a little bit of a heads up from the ground, because I know, because that's where I live. What they're doing is they're super, super saturating the entire region with condos. They're building up these really cheap-ass condominiums all over the place in hopes that, because property value, of course, is going up through the roof. And about 2010, when the Olympics hit, all the condos are going to be worth crap, because after the Olympics leave, the bottom's going to fall out of the market and everything's going to be sold for pretty much nothing. So there's a lot of money to be made because the Olympics are coming here. So, you know, Jimmy Pattison and all the muckety-mucks there, all the good core politicals local, are getting involved because they want to make a big mess of money. And, you know, they want to set up the village and la, la, la. And they've got, you know, the Sea to Sky Highway. And everybody's going off about how this is going to help us all corporately. It's great for the economy and all this kind of jazz. Well, it's not really great for the economy. What it's great for are a few rich bastards who are going to clean house when the Olympics shows up. The whole thing is like this big core political dupe. And they wave the flag and they claim about running and how wonderful it is for these athletes. But what do the athletes get out of it? Well, they get to compete in the Olympics. Well, that and 50 cents will get you a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? These athletes ought to be getting some kind of compensation for all the work they put in. You know what I mean? I mean, sure. Well, if they win, what happens if an Olympian gets a gold medal? What happens to them? Oh, they get to make commercials. That's what happens. They get sponsorship. That, to me, seems kind of sick and weird. You know, you're talking about a country where, well, all these countries get together, send their best and brightest young people to compete as athletes. And at the end of it, if they don't bring home the gold, well, no one really gives a shit. You're just the guy who got second place. You know what I mean? So the whole thing just kind of has a weird sort of ring to it, and the whole concept is kind of medieval anyway. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all for a competition where people want to, you know, go get together and find out who's the best of the best. But why have this huge, you know, shindig and turn into this big core political money grab? That's my problem I have with the Olympics. I don't really like it. Now, in flying car news, and this was sent to me by Pan Media, I know we're all disappointed that flying cars we were promised back in the 50s and 60s haven't come to fruition yet. And the reason why they haven't come to fruition yet is because they want to limit our movement. And if they give us flying cars, we're not going to be able to move anywhere and go where we choose. And the last thing that they want is they don't want their populations, they don't want the rats to get out of the cages. Okay, that's what it's about. That's why the gas prices keep going up and up and up and up and up. And there's no real sort of checksum to make sure who's making money on this. Should the gas prices be that high? No one really knows. Government's making money. Everybody's farming us for gas. It's about cash. It's all about cash. They will use any means they can to get the money out of your pocket. Now, I mean, like, getting back to this flying car thing, we're not living in the future until we have flying cars, right? Luxist has learned that NASA is addressing our grievances by funding a personal air vehicle challenge. Now, remember I was talking before about, you know, we WOGs have to get together and make a flying car? Well, this is something that can help you with that. Up for grabs is $250,000 in prize money for a variety of advancements in flying vehicle technology. Now, that's it. $250,000, which is not that much, really, in the realm of flying cars. You could earn $25,000 for an advancement in noise control and $150,000 for a vehicle with two or six seats that can fly at least 130 miles per hour for a 300-mile range while being fuel efficient and making good time door-to-door. So what do you want here? We want something that's quiet, can fly at least 130 miles per hour for 300 miles while being fuel efficient and making good time. I see. So anything else you want? You know, I mean, that's a pretty tall order here. Luxus Dieter Werlin makes a good point that NASA doesn't have the dough to put a proper incentive up for this challenge. Perhaps Paul Allen is looking for another pet project to fund, which is true. You know, what if we had a really serious challenge out there? We put like $10 million on the plate, because you're not going to get shit with $250,000. I mean, people, you know, there's cars right now that are ground cars that cost more than $250,000. So why would somebody, you know, bust their ass, you know, spend millions of dollars just to get this $250,000. Man, you can't even get a decent apartment for that in Vancouver anymore. After all, because we got the Olympics coming, right? Mind you, you want to show up in about after the 2012 Olympics or 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, show up in 2011, and you'll probably be able to get five apartments for $250,000. But that's okay. No one really cares because in the end, it's the consumer who takes it in the teeth, right? That's what it's all about, you know, really. And again, I don't even think that if someone was to come up with a flying car, that would really see market. Sure, someone would buy it. Sure, they'd license the technology, probably use it for making more unmanned aerial drones and all the rest of it, make more war machines and whatnot. But, you know, I don't think they're really going to hand us flying cars anytime soon. Now, in core political censorship news, this was sent to me by Nix. Now, Jell-O was talking about this back in the day, okay, when the first tipper sticker showed up, you know, those parental advisory stickers. Well, it seems that Walmart, America's largest retailer, prides itself with being a family-friendly store with smiley faces guiding stressed-out breadwinners to a land of low-cost, guilt-free consumption, which it's not really guilt-free because a lot of stuff sold at Walmart is made at sweatshops. Indeed, there are mega Walmarts that inhabit spaces the size of five football fields, and the total square footage of all Walmart stores nationwide tops 25 million square feet. As you've probably heard, the everyday low prices at these concrete boxes of utopian consumption have tremendous costs for our environment, our workers, our wages, our communities, and the public coffers. This is why there's more and more communities standing up to fight against Walmart. But they also come at the expense of free speech and artistic expression as the corporation targets items that often include progressive criticism of conservative values. Ah! Based in Bentonville, Arizona, the brand behemoth has become the self-appointed culture police by screening the music, books, and magazines that many Americans will be able to access in a number of communities. Walmart is the only convenience store in America stocking culture products. I see. Take, for example, Walmart's refusal to sell Sheryl Crow's self-titled album in 1996, citing objections to a lyric that criticized Walmart for selling handguns, a practice the chain has since discontinued, which they felt was unfair and irresponsible. So, Sheryl Crow, we're not talking about Marilyn Manson here, we're talking about Sheryl Crow. Okay, much as Crow probably appreciated their paternalistic advice as the number one CD retailer in the world, yes, the world, so nobody sells more CDs than Walmart, with sales accounting for 10% of total domestic CD sales, a Walmart boycott can result in hundreds of thousands lost in album sales. Now, that stat, that means the money wasn't lost, it means they just didn't make that money. But anyway, the record industry is never too proud to bend over for sales and has started issuing two versions of the same album, one sanitized. Sometimes this entails altering the cover art, as John Mellencamp was asked to do for his Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky, whose cover featured an angel and a devil in the background. Nirvana actually changed the song title from Rape Me to Waif Me for Walmart, whatever the hell that means, on both versions, and Jell-O talked about that as well. Both they and the Goo Goo Dolls came under fire for portraying babies on the cover on their cover art as well. No babies! Can't have any babies on the cover art. The cover of the Goo Goo Dolls album titled A Boy Named Goo featured a baby covered in blackberry juice. Oh my god! Get the babies out of the... Why is that a problem? Walmart banned it and only reversed its decision after it came under pressure from the media. So what? Is Walmart not like blackberries or something? Is that a racist thing? It's because they're black? I mean, okay, I'm reaching for that one, I know. Walmart official statement on music is as follows. Quote, Walmart will not stock music with parental guidance stickers. Period. While Walmart sets high standards, it would not be possible to eliminate every image, word, or topic that an individual might find objectionable. And the goal is not to eliminate the need for parents to view the merchandise their children buy. The policy simply helps to eliminate the most objectionable material from Walmart's shelves. Well, that's great. Thank you very much. That's so good that you're so concerned about, you know, our mental headspace and timing. Isn't that nice that Walmart cares so much about all these crazy people? I'm sorry, but we need to stop going to these big box stores. I know we don't have a lot of money. I know that. Believe you me, I know we don't have a lot of cash, but I do not shop at Walmart. I don't. I've never been there. Well, that's a lie. I've been there once or twice, but I can't remember if I've ever actually bought anything there. To be honest with you, we got one local here. Of course you got one local. You got one local too. Everybody's got one local. These bastards are everywhere. But do you really need to go there? I mean, even if you wind up buying your stuff from another big box store, at least it's got the virtue of saying at least it wasn't Walmart. You know what I mean? For nothing less than the more we buy there, the more we're just rolling over and saying, yeah, okay, I guess we'll just give in to the core political tyranny. Because believe you me, core political tyranny is Walmart. I mean, walk in through the doors. There's senior citizens in there with little blue aprons on. Hi, welcome to Walmart. I'm like, ah, God, I'll get you out of here. Don't you worry, you know? There's people out there, it's just insane the way that these people are being enslaved all for these big box stores, you know? And then they got, it just goes on and on and on. I cannot stand that. But, you know, I guess this is the world we live in, and this is the face of the enemy. The enemy wears a yellow happy face. Now, on to Paranoid America news, and this was sent to me by Phoenix. Now, generally, I try to stay away from stories like this, but this one is so incredibly psychotic, so totally paranoid that I have absolutely no choice but to report on it. A 24-year-old dental student who sent a note and a wad of bubblegum with her fine for a speeding ticket is on trial in Albuquerque on two felony counts of mailing a threat. Okay? Rosemary Ho of Phoenix is accused of mailing a note to the Santa Fe Motor Vehicle Division office in 2003 that read, the note read, caution, touch at own risk or use gloves. Ha ha. That's what the note read. That's the vicious threat. That's the total, oh my God, I'm going to kill your family. Caution, touch at your own risk, use gloves, because she used bubble gum. The word caution was highlighted in pink, oh my God. The letter enclosed an $80 money order to pay her traffic ticket. The motor vehicle department called the FBI. Each count of mailing threatening communications could net Ho 5 years in prison if she's found guilty. So this broad's facing 10 years in the slammer for making a joke with a parking ticket and some bubble gum. That is Paranoid America at its finest. How far has America fallen that they have completely lost their sense of ha-ha? Personally, I mean, there's a whole number of people here that should be blamed. I mean, the guy who opened the letter and saw that and freaked out was like, oh, no! You know, guys, give me a break, would you? What do you think? This chick, like, she put a money order in there. Like, you know her name. You know, come on. She's not putting anthrax in. Where would the name, like, my God, how nuts are people getting? And now this broad's going to trial and looking at 10 years in the slammer for fucking bubble gum? Are you even kidding me? This is out of control. I can't believe how insane America's gone. Now, I get a little bit more cyberpunk kid here for you. And this is some webbing that I had sent in. Now, I would love to have copied a bunch of shit off of their website. But unfortunately, they've got this new trend going where they're using just Flash animation, so I can't copy any tags. But what this stuff is, if you go and click on the link, it's like an e-wallet type concept taken to a whole nother level. Now, again, I have not seen the product, but what it is a shoulder rig for gadgets. Now, having used shoulder rigs myself, they do have use. They're good in the summertime, but they're not so very good if you're going to be carrying around. Well, I mean, they're pretty bulky. You know, you wear them underneath your arms and everything, but this guy here, they've taken it so they have your e-wallet, you got a place for your PDA, your flashlight, you got your multi-tool, all that stuff, all basically, you know, your Beltline kit that's being, you know, put into this kind of cool-looking shoulder rig. Good luck getting onto a plane with it. I mean, if I would probably take that off and carry it at arm's length or maybe drag it behind you on a piece of string if I was going through an airport security with this thing, but it looks kind of neat. And the price is not way out of control. It's about $80 for the rig, and that's not too bad because I think the e-wallets were actually, a little bit more money than that. Now, I will state again, I have no idea the quality of this gear. I have not seen any reviews of the quality of this gear. But the shoulder holster options, as well as, you know, their little zip cord wallets and stuff like that they have, are kind of neat. I'd rather have the RFID wallet killer from that I talked about the other day, where they had, you know, the garments that, you know, had silver lining so they could stop all the RFID stuff. I'd rather have a wallet like that myself, or maybe a Spec Ops THE wallet. That's what I use, actually, everyday real life. But this kind of a hookup, it's not too bad. It's not too bad because you know, the more gadgets you get, you know, it's kind of hard to lug them around with you. And after all, we're only as good as our drugs and technology make us. Now, in something a little bit more positive here, you may have heard of this thing called the Wakamura, because I found a news link off of Japan Today where they're saying that Mitsubishi Heavy Industries Limited said Wednesday it plans to commercialize the Wakamura humanoid robot, possibly within this year. The company has now formed an alliance on the business with seven different firms. The price for the 1 meter high robot weighing 30 kilograms is expected to be in the 1 million yen, a public relations official and heavy machinery maker said. So that's about 14 grand. Now, the question that begs is, what exactly is a Wakamura humanoid robot? So I did a little searching and I found this for you. Now, this is kind of interesting because I'd like to get me one of these. Mind you, a million yen is about 14 grand US, so gonna have to wait out on that. Gonna have to get the donations up first. Wakamura is an experimental Linux-powered humanoid robot developed by Japan's Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. Is making a guest appearance at the Embedded Systems Conference held this week in San Francisco. Now, this is an old article, so that's actually not really the case. The 3-foot 3-inch robot, 60-pound robot, is described as the first human-sized robot capable of providing companionship or functioning as a caretaker and a house sitter. The battery-operated robot moves about on wheels, so it's not like a little battle pod or anything, and recharges itself when its batteries run low. Wakamura was developed by the robot groups and new products at Space Systems Department of Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. And now that they've got that up there, now what does this robot do? Okay, according so Monta Vista said that what does the robot actually do? What is its capabilities? Wakamura features continuous access to the internet. Ah, which means that, you know, server could hack Wakamura and therefore, you know, the robots could turn on us, circa iRobot. And comes equipped with a voice and face recognition capabilities to allow the robot to search for and follow voices, faces, and movements. Very interesting stuff. It has the ability to comprehend and interact with humans, such as discussing daily news it obtains via the internet based on built-in dictionary and voice recognition. It can be programmed to call or email a designated person, a hospital security firm, or if it notices a problem. When connecting remotely to Wakamura via its built-in camera-equipped mobile phone, users can see images of the house the robot serves and even communicate with family members at home, so it also turns into a telephone. And an informative online presentation about Wakamura and its development project is available off of the link. The presentation includes information about the history of the project, the robot's internal architecture, target specifications, service provision concept, plus lots of pics. The robot that is... The Wakamura's concept and capabilities are summarized by saying that a robot that is friendly for people and useful in your life at home, so it's got to be friendly and useful. I don't really understand the concept of a robot being friendly myself, because friendly, you know, kind of denotes a human sort of nature. It's supposed to live, quote-unquote, with family members, speak spontaneously in accordance with the family's members' requirement, has its own role in the family, which is a little bit frightening that you have a machine taking over a role in a family, but anyway. Natural and enriched communication in accordance with life scenes, recognizes approximately 10,000 words required for daily life, and provides topics in accordance with life scenes, whatever the hell that means, and it communicates in a friendly manner using gestures. Yeah, I bet it can do some good gestures. Autonomous actions in accordance with its own rhythm of life. The robot has a daily rhythm of life, moves in accordance with time and purpose, automatically charges its batteries, and lives with family members. They're always, you know, it's always saying living, you know, if it's alive, it's your friend. And now this will probably be our overlord right there, since it can link right up to the internet and people can watch us through it. Who's to say as these robots roll out? Of course, everyone, you know, you got your very own overseer that you paid 14 grand for. Information and services provided by connecting itself to the internet. Connects itself to the internet to provide various external information and services, reflects the information obtained from the contact of the owner and succeeding service provision. Aha! So, we have, you want to bet that, of course, no one's going to be allowed to crack this sucker open. You get this robot home, you're not going to be able to open it up and program it yourself. No. That won't be allowed at all. You're going to have to use the existing software in the robot, but do some investigation. And I'm really sure that when these things come down in price, we WOGs will be able to gut this sucker and put a ghost in of our own design. On to your daily hack. Today's daily hack is not a scam, and it's thanks to Thunderspud. Sent me this one, and I probably covered this one before, but after all, you know, I love books. And some of the great guys who come out with books are Loom Panix. Loom Panix Unlimited is a publishing and bookselling company specializing in odd, unusual, controversial, and wild-ass books with an emphasis on questioning authority. They've been in business for 28 years. Now, I got one of their catalogs back in the day, back in like 93. They're a small brand business, bringing about 15 titles a year and offering approximately 150 new titles per year from other publishers. The current catalog with supplements contains more than 800 titles. We have a staff that takes orders and answers questions daily from 7 a.m. through 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry. I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information. Oh, actually, I won't be back tomorrow. What I will be back is I'll be back on Monday to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This has been a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of those willing to fight in a time of crisis. And there's 71 of them for the month of July 2005. And there was 5 new people who showed up. And if you would like to join those ranks, if you would like to be one of, I guess, 76, well, not one of the 76, you wouldn't be one of the 76, but if you'd like to add to that number so that you can contribute to making sure this show keeps on going, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab because every little bit helps. What else have I got here for you? Not much. That's it. So thanks to everyone and their assistance gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Covenant, great band, called Call the Ships to Port. I'm going to leave you now with a track by Apocalyptica called Toreador. Maybe I wonder if that's named after the Vampire Clan or the Bullfighter. But anyway, it could either way. I think it sounds a little bit more like a Vampire Clan. You tell me. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.